Finding the right person for the job isn't easy. Just ask someone who hired a lounge singer to be their office receptionist.
Hello, this is Mickey Marquis, and you've reached the office of Doug & Associates. Thank you very much. Catch me Tuesday nights at the Hotel Johnson. Hello?
But if you've got an insurance question, you can always count on your local GEICO agent. They can bundle your policies, which could save you hundreds.
Doug & Associates, this is Mickey Marquis. Hello?
For expert help with all your insurance needs, visit geico.com/local today.
Kathleen, we got away with not shaving as regularly when we were stuck at home for over a year. But now we're out and about. It's time to get friendly with your razor again.
That's why I love Athena Club, because I'm the type of person to buy one razor and then use it every day for 3 years. But that's not a problem with Athena Club, because I love how they just ship my razors directly to my house. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's time for a hygiene update.
Yeah, there is no better razor out there than the Athena Club razor. Athena Club's products make shaving more fun and easy. It's the prettiest razor that Kathleen and I have ever seen, and it's also gentle on our skin. It has hyaluronic acid in it, which is amazing, and it's so gentle on your curves.
The best part is that the razor kit is only $9, and it comes with 2 blade heads, a magnetic hook for your shower, and you get to pick your handle color. $9. Before I was introduced to Athena Club's razor, I would go to my local drugstore and I would spend $17 on the ladies' razors because of, you know, pink tax.
Pink tax, yeah.
That doesn't exist with Athena Club's razor kit.
Kathleen and I both have the baby blue razor. They have black and white and pink and just great colors, and the replacement blades ship to you free. So show your skin you care with the Athena Club razor kit. Sign up today and you'll get 20% off your first order.
Just go to athenaclub.com and use the promo code TASTE, A-T-H-E-N-A, club, C-L-U-B.com, and use the promo code TASTE for 20% off. La, 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 la. Did you just blow out a candle?
Yeah.
What was the candle on for this morning? It's like 100 degrees outside.
I know, but I wanted to make a nice vibe in here.
Yeah. I get that.
Really have a nice, like, ambiance. But, like, I also don't want to... It's my favorite candle. I don't want to waste it while we're podcasting and I'm distracted. You know, I want to be able to, like, really dance nude around it and enjoy it.
I feel the same way about eating when I'm also entertaining people. Like, I'm never going to taste my food. It's just never going to happen.
Right. Right. Exactly. Like, why waste it? It's like, that's why grandma would always entertain and then go eat in the kitchen by herself, filled with shame.
No, she just wanted to taste her food.
Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did. Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Bethany Watson, your bodysuit wearing, baseball watching. It's not enough coffee creamer unless the coffee tastes like hot chocolate, friend.
And I'm Kathleen Heaney, your turkey burger expert. On an antibiotic that's likely going to ruin my life, I went to a party where I didn't know anyone and I survived, friend.
And every week, Kathleen and I get together to discuss our lives and what's weird in the world. And we invite you to join us. Kathleen, what are we talking about this week?
This week, I am talking about death doulas.
Oh, wow. This is a topic I'm fascinated about, but I've actually done very little research into it.
Yeah.
I know a lot about birth doulas, but not a lot about death doulas. What made you interested in this?
We're going to take a little dark turn. I heard someone mention it at my nephew's 8th grade graduation party, which, you know, light conversation.
Yeah, that sounds like a party I'd be into.
And then I heard it mentioned again somewhere else, and I was like, okay, this is something that I need to look into.
Yeah. I think it's a very good thing. And if you don't know what a doula is, stay tuned. You'll learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I am talking about this. Is it a phobia? Is it a disorder? Kathleen, did I text you a picture or not? Wait.
No.
Nope, I didn't. Kathleen, I'm going to hold a photo up to our camera here.
Okay.
And I want you to tell me how this photo makes you feel.
Yeah, it's all the little holes and stuff. It doesn't make me feel good.
It's a lotus seed pod. It's basically a plant that has a bunch of holes in it. I'm going to talk about the phenomenon of trypophobia.
Oh, yes, Bethany.
The fear of lots of tiny little holes.
Yes, but Bethany, this is something I think about a lot. You know what? It's so weird that you're talking about this because just this weekend I was driving and thinking about dried out lotus flowers and how ugly they are and why do people love them? Yeah.
People love using them in crafts. People love to put them in a folksy wreath or in a bouquet of folksy flowers in a folksy pitcher.
They're not pretty.
No, they're upsetting. Oh. I have thoughts on trypophobia. If you have it, I'm going to try to not describe too many things about like the things that trigger it because I don't, you know, we don't want to lose listeners.
Yeah.
But it's interesting and I have some thoughts. So we're going to discuss it and okay. Its intersection with pop culture and why some TV shows made people mad because they triggered trypophobia. Kathleen, tell me about this antibiotic you're on and why is it going to ruin your life?
Bethany, I am suffering. A couple of episodes ago, and we actually got quite a lot of response from it, I talked about how I started washing my face because I had this acne that I couldn't identify. Yeah. Started washing my face with Maximum Strength Selsun Blue.
Yeah.
And for a while, it was really helping me. I was like, wow, my skin looks amazing. And then all of a sudden, this like rash came back. And I was like, okay, now it's time to like stop with the home remedies and actually go to the dermatologist.
Yeah, let's talk to a doctor about this.
So gentle listeners, if you are someone who has little red, like little red dots around your mouth and your nose specifically, and you've tried all these acne products and you can't get them to go away, you need to look into perorial dermatitis.
How do you spell perorial?
P-E-R-I-O-R-A-L dermatitis. So it turns out it's like an overgrowth of yeast or candida or something around my mouth. It's causing this acne that literally will not go away without an antibiotic. And the dermatologist is okay. It's like, okay, we're going to start you on this antibiotic. It's going to be 2 weeks. Then we might have to go to a month. We'll see. I'm like, oh, great.
Oh, God.
It's going to upset your stomach.
Oh, no. Can I ask which antibiotic it is?
You know, I don't have it in front of me. I can't even remember. I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay.
I'll be like, hey, this is the antibiotic that I'm on. And the nurse is like, okay, don't take it and then lay down because you might get heartburn. I'm like, great. Laying down is my favorite activity.
Yeah, it's the best kind of laying. Yeah.
Also, if you take this, try and stay out of the sun because you will get severely burned.
Wow. And God, I wish you knew which antibiotic it is because this sounds like a mess.
So I get to CVS and I'm checking out and the girl who's checking me out, the screen flashes and is like, dang. And she's like, hold on. So they get the pharmacist and the pharmacist is like, okay, well, you're going to get pregnant if you have sex while you're on this antibiotic because it counteracts with your birth control. And I'm like, great. This antibiotic is ruining my life.
Whoa, this thing is intense.
Anyway.
Kathleen, will you go get the bottle of antibiotics so I know which one it is?
Okay, hang on a second. It is called doxycycline hyclate.
Okay.
And I haven't started it yet because I'm trying to get the bang bangs in before I can't have sex for like
Is this skin condition contagious?
No, it's not. It's a blessing that happens to women in their late 20s and early 30s. Okay. Bless up.
Bless up. You know? Okay, so it's not like your husband's going to get it if you guys are like making out.
No. It's okay. Not contagious at all. But anyway, what's new with you, Bethany?
Well, let's do a fire escape buffet update. Let's see. So we are now up to 3 squirrels. The one with the chunk out of its back seems to be improving. I was really worried about him.
Oh, my God.
My landlady thinks it's because it's mating season, and he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So we have 3 squirrels. We now have 3 mourning doves up from 2. We have a cardinal, a blue jay, and a finch named David.
Finch named David?
Yeah.
Why is his name David? Is he wearing glasses?
Dennis wanted to name him David after David Fincher. I wanted to name him David after David Lynch. So David Finch works on 2 accounts. So still no crows, still no ravens, which is okay. I did put out a tray of water that I refresh every day so that because I've heard that crows like water. And I have seen the squirrel and the finch drinking from the water, which I think I need to still refill it. So that's what's going on. We've all hit a really nice level of peace. There's a real Pax Romana happening on my fire escape right now. I think it's going to be okay.
in a similar vein, my mom is having a problem with pigeons in her backyard.
Uh-huh. What's the problem? There aren't enough because pigeons are doves.
No, Bethany, no. They're gross animals that are shitting all over her yard. And it's becoming a health problem because she's trying to grow vegetables and then they're shitting all over the place and they're shitting on the chairs. And it's because her neighbor has a very tall peak in their roof. And so they like the tall peak and then they swoop in down to my mom's backyard to use the bathroom.
You know what? I would also encourage your mother to try and woo some ravens, because I feel like ravens will probably scare away the pigeons too. Now, I'm fully making this up, but
back in January, my mom's sort of feral / we welcomed this cat into the house cat died.
Yeah.
And doesn't everybody have one of those that starts out as an outdoor cat and you're just like, oh, I think I have a soft spot in my heart for you.
Yeah.
And really, that cat's name was Marcus. Marcus was the mayor of the backyard. Marcus kept the birds in check. And so now the rabbits and the birds are running amok. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, do scarecrows actually work? Like, do they actually work?
Hard to say. I think pigeons are averse to like things that smell. I've heard cinnamon is something. I've heard like hot pepper is this thing they don't like.
Oh.
But you know, it could also just go back to what you and I have recently decided to do about everything, which is spray our own urine all over the backyard. And maybe that'll do it.
I told my mom, I said, take a pee in a jar and just go back there and show them who's boss.
But also, pigeons are all over New York City, and New York City is covered in urine. And I feel like they're probably used to it by now.
Do you know that there's a whole sect of people who believe that birds were once upon a time real, but the ones that exist today are no longer real, and they're just spies for the government? Did you know that?
No.
Shit, you're not. Yeah.
All birds?
All birds.
It explains why our government is so in debt. There are so many birds out there.
Bethany, there are so many articles about this. It's really funny. A big group of people who insist birds aren't real from Vice in August of 2020. I mean, it's...
Oh, my God. You know, being a believer in conspiracy theories used to be fun, but now it's not. Because some people take it way too far. And, like, I don't know, storm the Capitol. But, like, our government has not done itself any favors in regards to this specific conspiracy theory. Yeah. Because I believe it was the U.S. government that at one point tried to turn cats into spies by putting little microphones in them and having them walk around Russians.
It's not a bad idea.
And seeing if they could pick up any Russian chatter.
Bethany, wait, is this true?
Yeah. Stop. Cats used as spies. I've already Google searched this because it came up purple.
Conspiracy theories are good if you suffer from social anxiety because you can talk to people that you don't know about conspiracy theories. I always find that really helpful when I'm at parties where I don't know people.
Yeah. But like, you don't want to fall too deeply into it. Like, no. I do love talking about how I think Eisenhower made a pact with the aliens. We've talked about this many times on this podcast.
That's one of my go-tos, Bethany. I was at a party this weekend. I wasn't going to know anybody. And really, lately, my top two conversation starters are Eisenhower and the aliens, and then also hats that are umbrella hats.
But I feel like the Eisenhower made a pact with the aliens conspiracy theory is fairly innocuous because it's pretty distant. It's a distant past, you know, and like there aren't a ton of real world implications vis-a-vis racism and that kind of thing. But when it gets into like some darker ones, it's a little sad. How did your party go this weekend? And did you have to bring up the Eisenhower?
Of course, Bethany, that is my go-to.
Yeah. And you said you had a good time?
I had a good time. I was really nervous. I was driving there. I didn't have Neil with me. It's my internet friend, Kathleen.
Wait, have you ever met Kathleen before?
I met her once, very briefly. But we text each other every day because whenever I see, like in passing, another Kathleen, I'm like, hey, Kathleen, love your name. Like, have you ever met another Bethany?
Yeah, my best friend growing up was named Bethany.
Oh, that's right. I always forget. Yeah. Did she spell it the same way?
Yeah.
Where's Bethany now?
She's in Wisconsin.
Do you still talk to her?
We still text every once in a while. Yeah, she's great.
So I met this girl. She used to live in Hoboken, but a week before we met, she's like, oh, I'm leaving Hoboken. I'm like, oh, okay.
And you just like met her on Facebook?
I met her on Instagram because her apartment was featured on a local blog here called Hoboken Girl, and her apartment was darling, and that's how we started chatting.
Amazing. That's amazing.
Her sister ended up living just a few doors down from me. I mean, it's like a really small world. But anyway, I met her once before. And then she's like, is it weird if I invite you to my housewarming / engagement party? I was like, no, not weird.
And you went.
And I went. I wanted to cancel so badly.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, Kathleen, you're going to do this. You're going to you're going to meet people and you're going to be charming. It was scary. But Bethany, the Eisenhower meeting the aliens is like, it really breaks the ice with all sorts of people and all sorts of demographics. And I have to thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. Did it alienate you? No pun intended from anyone?
Haha. No. It made me seem vivacious.
Yeah, you know, when in doubt, just pepper some alien talk. It's like it's timely now, too. You know, they released the documents and they were boring. And so it gives you something to talk about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If at any point, Kathleen, during this podcast today, you find yourself getting bored.
Yeah.
Just bring up Eisenhower and the aliens. And that will kind of help gauge the temperature of the podcast and how it's going. All right.
Before we wrap up section one, I want to hear about baseball.
Oh, I watch baseball now. Baseball's a thing I do.
Okay.
There was the Mets were playing this weekend. I'm dating a Mets fan.
I didn't realize that. That Dennis is like, is he a sports guy?
He is a baseball guy.
Okay.
Yeah. He's not really a sports guy, but he does enjoy baseball.
Okay.
He said it's because it's a sport you can talk during, which is like very much tracks for him.
Yeah.
So there was like a doubleheader yesterday and a game on Saturday.
Oh.
So we watched them and I am learning about baseball. Turns out I like having a live sporting event on the TV in the background. It reminds me of my dad. It reminds me of growing up.
Oh.
And so we're watching it and Dennis is teaching me about baseball because I used to just not care. I learned what a sac fly is. Kathleen?
What's a sac fly?
Thanks for asking. Stands for sacrificial fly.
Okay.
It took me an hour to learn it and involved one argument, but it was because I didn't feel heard or understood by what was confusing me. But here's what I think a sac fly is. And if you're a baseball fan, don't at me. So let's say, Kathleen, that you're batting, okay? You're batting for the Mets and you have someone who's like on third base and they're ready to come home.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know what? I am feeling like a good teammate. I am not looking to like get a run for myself or change my average. I just want to make sure that this friend of mine gets home from third to home.
Yes, okay? Yes.
So you hit the ball
as
hard and high as you can without it being a home run.
Yeah.
You want it to go way out there, but not too far.
Yeah.
You know that the catcher in the outfield is going to catch it.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, your dude on third can get home. I think that's what a sac fly is.
Yeah. The concept of a sac fly is not all that much different than the death doula topic I'm going to be talking about.
Oh, I'm excited to hear how these are connected.
You sacrifice so people can come home.
Okay. Okay, good. Gentle listener, you can't see, thank God, but I'm literally only recording in my bra.
I don't hate it.
A shirt felt like too much to do today. Thank God it's my third love bra, so Kathleen doesn't have to look at something that's like falling apart and ill-fitting.
Bethany and I have been partners with Third Love for a while now, and we can't say enough nice things about them. They're the only bras that I wear. If both of my Third Love bras are dirty, I just wear them anyway because I can't even bear the thought of putting a different bra on. And also, I have really grown to love their underwear. I've thrown away a lot of my old underwear lately, and I've stopped up more on Third Love.
Yeah, it just makes such a huge difference in your day to have a bra that fits you correctly. Nothing's digging in. Straps are actually supporting your breasts. Nothing's like pulling or pinching or tugging. And you don't feel like you want to rip it off at the end of the day. That is the biggest thing for me. I love my Third Love bras. I think I have 7.
So this is what you do. You go to thirdlove.com and you take their quiz. And you have to be brutally honest. Like, look at your boobs in the mirror without a bra on before you take this quiz. After you take this quiz, Third Love is going to give you a size that you have never probably seen before. You're going to be like, what? That size? That's not me. But I swear, when you get your bra in the mail, it's going to feel better than any other bra you've had on your body.
And they stand behind their products. If you don't love it, you can exchange and return for free. And their team of expert fit stylists are available via chat or email to answer all of your questions.
So you deserve some TLC. That's Third Love Comfort. Go to thirdlove.com/taste right now to get 20% off of your first purchase.
That's thirdlove.com/taste for 20% off today.
So twice recently, the word death doula has come up for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned in section one that I heard someone mention it at a party, but then I also heard, and I should have the name of this actress at the tip of my fingers, Riley Keough.
Yeah, she's Elvis Presley's what, great-granddaughter?
Yeah.
She's an amazing actress.
She's very talented, and I think she's promoting a new movie right now, but I was listening to WNYC, and she was talking about after how she lost her brother, I believe, to suicide, she decided to, in addition to being an actress, she decided to become a death doula. Because when you lose someone, it is a journey that most of the time you have never had to navigate before, and you can feel kind of lost.
Yeah. Her brother died by suicide, I think, last year. Like, it's very recent. Very, very recent.
Yeah.
And he, I mean, I just remember reading about it. It was just like so sudden, and it rocked the whole family, of course, as it obviously would.
If you had to take a guess, would you say that it's very likely that, at least in American culture, that death is the number one fear that people have?
Oh, total. I mean, I would guess, because look at the way that we talk about it.
Yeah.
First of all, we don't. Mm-hmm. Second of all, we don't want to see people growing old. Off the air, Kathleen, you and I were talking about just the way that we have a hard time finding older people in the media who are allowed to look old and be old.
Or just like even in terms of clothing brands, styling for people who are older.
Yeah. And then look at the way we talk about death in the language we use. We make death very active. Like, they passed on, they crossed over, we lost them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always action words versus something that is final.
Yes.
We sugarcoat it and make it a very like forward momentum process, which it isn't.
It's not. No, it's the end of a life. And, you know, and I sort of have this belief that your energy continues on in a multitude of ways, but that body is done. The timer went off. It's cooked.
Right. Until we figure out a way to reanimate, you know, and then once we can reanimate, then we'll talk about death differently. And, you know, when people raise up from the dead and take over like they did in Las Vegas, like they did in Army of the Dead, that's a different story.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm prepared for that. I've been thinking about that moment in time when the dead will rise.
We're all crafting a certain level of skills we can use to combat the undead. But until then, we have to process.
So a doula. I think a lot of people, I mean, I know a lot of people associate doulas with the birthing process, right?
Right. What is a doula?
A doula is a trained companion who is not a healthcare professional who supports another individual through a significant health-related experience.
Usually you hear about birth doulas, so they help the mom. They're not like a midwife.
Yes.
They're not there to help deliver the baby. No. They're just there for the woman giving birth.
Yes, exactly. And they work with the midwife, but it's sort of like a personal advocate for a mother giving birth. And I know a lot of people who now have doulas, even when they're doing hospital births.
Yeah.
Because the doula knows the healthcare system, they know that hospital, and they're there to advocate just for you. Because when you think about it, like, nurses have so many patients, they can't advocate for you.
Not always.
And so death doula is sort of the buzzword right now, also referred to the end of life doula. And they are someone who is there to help people with the process of dying, and also help the families of individuals who are currently dying.
You have to be such a special person to to take this on.
Yeah. I was ththinking of your mom.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause your mom just has that bedside manner where just listening to her talk, she's infinitely wise. And then also your mom, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that your mom, built a profession with babies and birthing babies. Mm-hmm. your mom just sort of has that presence. And I, especially for the end of life doula, it takes, it's a gift that people are given. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times it's something, a path that people choose after they've experienced their own really traumatizing end of life situation.
Well, and it's interesting you bring up my mom, because my mom, the last 20 or so years, has done doula work.
Yeah.
You know, so she went from being a labor and delivery nurse for a long time to then doing doula work and training doulas and coordinating doulas within a hospital setting.
Yeah.
But I know that end of life care is also something that she's talked about before, where she, like, babies and the elderly, this isn't the first time that they've been mentioned together. You know, there's a lot in common with like newly born and about to pass.
Yes.
And
it's
a certain kind of person. So have you, did you find that by and large people who go into being a death doula have had some sort of big loss themselves?
Yes. Or they were, like your mom, previously a medical professional. I've been listening to this podcast and I cannot get enough of it. Ask a Death Doula, End of Life Education with Suzanne B. O'Brien. Now, Suzanne B. O'Brien, RN, she was a hospice nurse that transitioned into being an end of life doula, because when you're a hospice nurse, and if you've ever had a family member in hospice, you know, people who work in hospice, sometimes they'll only come and see you once a week if the loved one is sort of status quo and there have been no big changes. Mm-hmm. And then also on top of that, there's a lot of paperwork, because medical professionals, they have to fill out all of this stuff. And in a very similar vein, but without a lot of the long lines and red tape, end-of-life doulas can spend much more time with the family and the individual who is dying to really help them through the process. You know, when my dad was dying, and I mean, and COVID is this whole other thing, but it felt like, because I mean, I lost my grandma many years ago, 15 years ago, I was still a teenager. It felt like, it was like, I don't know how to navigate this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to process my feelings. I don't know how to best care for him. And, you know, like, obviously I couldn't be at his bedside the whole time. But even this, the steps leading up to getting him in a nursing home, I wish that my mom and I had known about end of life doulas in that respect, because end of life doulas help you make decisions for your loved one. Like, they don't have to be there because your loved one is going to die that day. It's somebody that you can keep in your orbit to help you make decisions about, like, what kind of home to put your loved one in. And then, like, should they stay at home? Should they go to a nursing home? And then sort of navigating that area, because when we were trying to get my dad into a nursing home, we had to pay. And it was just like a month later that he died after he got in. We had to pay a lawyer who specialized in senior citizen law $5,000 to put my dad at the top of the list to get him into the veterans nursing home and to take care of all the paperwork for us, because that is how complicated the process was.
Oh, and, my God.
You know, and obviously there are situations where you need lawyers, but end of life doulas, I feel like maybe if you have a loved one who you feel is starting to decline, they can help you navigate it in sort of a softer way.
Yeah. Well, and it also, if it's something that you see coming, you know, it's an illness, or just old age, I feel like a death doula could also help prepare the person.
Yes.
Because I've had enough, like, my mother has lost enough people in her life where I've heard her talk about the conversations they have.
Yes.
And I hope she's okay with me talking about this. I'm not going to be too specific, but she had a friend who was declining. And, you know, my stepdad is a minister.
Yeah.
And her friend, pretty close to death, really suddenly very much needed to talk to my stepdad about what he truly believed was going to happen to her. Like, was she going to go to heaven?
Yeah.
Was there something after death? Like, and to really think about these concepts, it's very scary if you're the person
yeah.
who's mm-hmm. passing away. And I'm sure you worry about your family. Yeah. You worry about how they're going to do. And I wonder if having a death doula, you can at least look to them and be like, will you make sure my family's okay?
That's exactly what a death doula is there to do. It is a person who comforts the one who is dying, has conversations with the person who is dying, makes them snacks, massages their hands, checks on their pain, and then also checks on their emotional pain, you know, aside from physical, and then checks on their mm-hmm. spiritual pain. So death doulas are really there in three capacities, mm-hmm. in the physical capacity, in the emotional capacity, and the spiritual capacity. Because if you are the caretaker and also close family member of the person who is dying, if you don't have another individual there to support the process, it is extremely mm-hmm. taxing on you to sort of worry about the comfort of your loved one, but then also navigate the death by yourself as well.
Sure. Yeah. Your own emotions, their emotions, yeah. plus you're probably handling,
yeah.
is there a will? Yes. Like, do they have all this paperwork taken care
exactly.
of?
Exactly.
At the beginning of COVID, like when we were a few months in, I remember reading an article that was saying, if you are a caretaker, especially if you're the main or sole caretaker of somebody who is ill right now, yeah. the second you feel burned out,
yeah.
you need to reach out to someone and say, this is an emergency.
Yeah.
Because if a caretaker is burned out, that can lead to
all sorts of issues.
Disaster. I mean, on the bad end, it could lead to like abuse.
Yeah.
But even it could just a complete meltdown and being drained and being, you know, so burned out for so long.
Yeah.
This is amazing yeah. to hear about.
When my dad was dying, and my dad was sick for so long and in such poor health, and, you know, and the dementia didn't help with any of it, I saw my mom disintegrating because she was the family member and she was also the caretaker. And it would have been really helpful to have a third party come in and have hard conversations with my dad, you know, so we didn't have to have those yeah. hard conversations with him.
Yeah.
And so there's this really interesting article in USA Today about death doulas. And they talked about this man. His name is Jason Bradley Krause in Columbus, Ohio. He is a well-known weatherman on TV. And in 2018, he lost his husband, Chris, after Chris had an 18-month battle with leukemia. And he told USA Today that when he has a hard day, he pulls out a love letter that his late husband wrote to him before his death. And he said, there is so much comfort in this gift, and none of it would have been possible without a local end-of-life doula in Columbus, Ohio. Her name is Donna Baker.
So did she encourage
yes.
his husband to write this letter?
Yes. That is what death doulas do. It's sort of like an end-of-life therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And death doulas are there to also support people who are dying in a spiritual capacity. Have conversations like your mom's friend about where are they going? What is happening?
Mm-hmm.
But also, death doulas are really educated in terms of how much a wake is going to cost and different options
oh.
and cremation and burial processes. And they can also help you with those decisions. Like, did you know that there is a new process? Instead of cremation, there's something called aquamation.
No, wait, what's that? I mean, I imagine it involves water.
I know this is going to sound woo-woo, but I think that a lot of us need to open our hearts and minds to some woo-woo things.
Yeah.
Because I think it'll make life a little easier.
I agree with that.
When you tap into that spiritual side of you. So aquamation is an eco-friendly alternative to flame cremation. And basically what happens, it's a gentle process where water is used instead of fire to return a body back to Mother Nature. A body, instead of being burned, is put through a process called alkaline hydrolysis, in which a body is placed in a stainless steel vat containing water that's 200 degrees Fahrenheit, a solution of potassium hydroxide and water. And after 4 hours, all that remains is the skeleton and the bones, which are soft at that point, and then they are crushed and given to the deceased's family. The residual liquid contains no DNA, and the process uses only 5 to 10% of the energy that cremation uses.
I wonder where the rest of the, where the water goes afterwards.
Yeah, I should have.
No, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I like this discussion because I feel like death is so scary, and talking about it helps make it less scary because it's like so much of these main life processes are not talked about. I was having coffee with our editor, Charlotte, who's now on maternity leave, but she was saying something I've heard a lot of mothers who are pregnant say, which is there are so many parts of the actual delivery process that no one talks about, and you don't learn except in like whispered discussions.
Yeah.
Amongst friends, or like, oh, I didn't know that this was going to happen until I delivered, and I wish someone had told me. Like, we don't. Yeah. So I've been watching these videos from a woman named Caitlin Doty, and she's wonderful. She's on YouTube. She does like Ask a Mortician. Huh. She's very death positive. She looks like a goth.
I love that term, death positive. What a good term.
She looks just like you would want her to look like. Like she's a spooky goth, very pale, jet black hair, but she's a mortician and she advocates for like formaldehyde and preservative free burials.
Yeah.
You don't pump the body full of chemicals. Like the family is very involved in the process of how this person is going to be treated after their death, and like not being afraid of death and a body, a dead body afterwards. Like just very bringing these things out into the light instead of keeping them hidden and filled with fear.
Exactly. Death doulas are there to take the fear and the unknown out of the process. Suzanne O'Brien from the Ask a Death Doula podcast, she was saying how many times she has facilitated conversations between family members who had beef with each other on a loved one's deathbed. She's facilitated conversations with people who feel, you know, when you're dying, when you feel unsettled in some way, she can help those who are dying and those around them find peace. She was talking about how she had a patient with terminal cancer, and she was the death doula for this patient. And the patient, in the final stages of her life, said, "Cancer has taken away my looks. It has taken away my job title. It has taken away all of these superficial things that I once believed defined me. And it is a gift that came not looking like a gift."
Wow.
"Because now, in the purest form of just being with my family, I can spend my final days just enjoying their company and not worrying about all of these other things that I thought once defined me before."
Wow. Wow. Holy crap.
And Bethany, I think about people like you who aren't going to have children to take care of them in their final days. And like, maybe now is the time. I mean, God, oh my God,
to hire Bethany. Staff.
Bethany. Oh my, I don't want to say you need to start preparing for your death.
Girl, I've been preparing for my death since I was a goth at 17. Don't think I haven't.
In your 30s. But I'm saying that there more and more people are not having children. Like the elderly population in the United States, I looked up some statistics on this. Today, there are more than 46 million older adults in the United States at the age of 65 or older living in the U.S. So it's 2021. By 2050, that number is expected to grow to 90 million. So 46 million today, 90 million in 2050. Between the years 2020 and 2030 alone, this is when the baby boomers are going to reach age 65 or older. And it's projected to increase older adults in this country by almost 18 million. So maybe like this concept of a death doula isn't insane. Like, maybe if you don't have kids, and also if you do have kids, because kids shouldn't necessarily be burdened with being your caretaker, because it makes your relationship with them so much more complicated. And a lot of times it will hinder their lives when they have to put everything on hold to take care of you. And in many, and they can't grow. Like, I know somebody who was taking care of her father. Now she's taking care of her mother, and she will likely never get married and have kids because she has spent so much time taking care of her family members, and all she wants to do is be married and have kids.
I have so many thoughts about this because we used to live in like close-knit societies where everyone contributed, right? Everybody helped raise a child. Everybody helped a family member pass on. So it wasn't left to one person. I also have someone in my life whose entire life has been put on hold to take care of a parent who is in bad enough health that they need constant care, but is in no way close to death.
Yeah.
Right. So there's no end in sight, to put it crassly. But it's so interesting that you bring this up, Kathleen, because just this weekend, we watched this movie I had never heard of before called The Amusement Park.
Huh.
And do you know the director George Romero?
I don't.
He did, like, he's like kind of said to be the father of like the zombie.
Okay.
The zombie like movement in horror. He directed Night of the Living Dead. Like, he's the original guy.
Mm-hmm.
He directed this film called The Amusement Park that he did for this organization that I think was to help the elderly. The movie was lost. It was not released. And now Shudder has it in its full capacity. It's about an hour long. And it's about, it's like basically seeing what the elderly in our society go through from the perspective of a man walking into an amusement park. And like, the amusement park gets increasingly bizarre and threatening and scary.
Yeah.
And it really, like, it just makes you see what we do to people as they age in our country.
Yeah.
It's a very uncomfortable watch, but it's, I think, very good. And you should definitely watch it. It really makes you think, like, oh, one day I am going to be old and I am going to feel like a burden, and I am going to feel like I don't know who to turn to because everyone's busy and everything is expensive.
I don't think that it's too early for young adults to start thinking about that stage in their lives. So when, if God forbid something happens, you get to the point where you no longer can make decisions, you haven't lost your power completely because you made the decisions ahead of time.
Yeah.
A lot of times, one of the hardest parts of growing older and being really sick and being on your deathbed is that the system no longer deems you well enough to make your own decisions.
Yes.
And so having a death doula kind of gives you that power back.
I'm reading this Agatha Christie novel right now. And, you know, Agatha Christie novels are all about an old person dies and then their family's inheritance is thrown up in the air because they didn't make a will.
Yeah.
And there's this scene that I just read last night where it's this woman and she had a second stroke. So she was bedridden before and now she can't speak. And she's trying to communicate to her niece, you have to put Mary, my ward, into the will. You have to make sure she gets taken care of.
Yeah.
And this old woman is so upset because she cannot get the words out and she cannot get someone who's going to be on her side to put Mary in the will. And it's like this. It's like once someone said, yes, I will take care of this for you, she was able to completely relax.
Yeah.
It's this need to know that there's someone on your side.
Yes.
And who's going to protect you and make sure that you and your family are taken care of.
The podcast I keep mentioning, they said that there have been instances in their patients where they have this pain. They have this pain and, you know, the narcotics are upped and they still are having this pain. And a death doula, part of their job too, is to figure out if there is emotional or spiritual pain causing the pain that then becomes physical, because if that's the case, no amount of medicine is ever going to make it go away. And then you don't really have, if you die in the midst of all of that, you don't have a peaceful death. And so a doula is there to sort of navigate, pick apart, you know, if a human is a rotisserie chicken, the death doula there is to pick all the pieces off the bone until you're very peaceful and you can die peacefully. Do you? Oh my God, that's awful. That's
this
awful.
This is the second week in a row that we've mentioned rotisserie chicken.
Do you ever clean your house thinking, okay, I would be cool if I died tomorrow, my family would come in and see my house like this? Like, do you ever think about that?
Oh my God, my family would hate me. I actually think one of the best things I could do for my family is to leave my house a mess, because it's sort of like breaking up with someone like and being a jerk on purpose. So you give them an active thing to be angry against instead of just sad.
I know.
My family would be so mad at me. I have one side of a picture frame in my closet right now. Just one side of a picture frame in case I can do something with it, quote unquote.
Yep.
My closet in my bedroom is filled with things that I might be able to do something with.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the end of purging all of that, they're going to be like, thank God she's gone and could not amass anything more.
So, yeah, the other day I walked into our bedroom and Neil had left our lube and our sex toy.
Again?
Right on the nightstand.
He's always doing that.
I'm like, if we go out tonight and get into a car crash, this is what our family has to find.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, God, these two were sex crazed. Yeah. But we're not.
These two degenerates were having sex within their own relationship.
This conversation could go on for the entire length of this podcast. But I kind of want to end with this thought that I wrote down when I was thinking about this, is that healing and letting someone go is a different muscle is a muscle that most people don't know how to use. Because how do you know how to use your muscles? Muscle memory. Mm-hmm. But if you have never lost someone before, you have no muscle memory of how to navigate those waters. I said before, I felt like I was floating in space when my dad died, because I didn't know how to navigate these waters. There was no one there to say, what you're feeling is totally normal. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I have all of these. Oh my God, I promised myself I wouldn't cry. Stupid Kathleen, stupid Kathleen.
Why do you promise yourself that? Anyone who promises themselves they're not going to cry, they always cry.
I know.
It's fine.
I keep having these dreams where my dad is alive again. And I say to him, we liked it better when you were dead.
Which is so,
I mean, I always wake up and I tell my mom, I say, God, I had one of those dreams again. And I think a death doula would have been really helpful in the capacity to me to say, you can still grieve your father while also being happy that he's no longer around. Like, does that make sense?
Completely. Kathleen, when your father passed away, I was talking to my therapist about it, because you had a very fraught, complicated relationship with your dad.
Yeah. That's why I keep telling him in my dreams, will you please die again? We liked it better when you were dead.
He was not always the best person to be around.
No.
And I was telling my therapist, I don't understand that, because my relationship with my dad has always been a very loving, gentle, kind father. And I don't understand what Kathleen is going through, and I want to be able to help her. And my therapist was like, it's incredibly tough to mourn someone who you also are relieved to not have to be around.
Yeah, someone that you love and hate at the same time.
And she said that can often make the mourning process and the loss worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you've lost the chance to make things better.
So anyway, death doulas. Everybody sign up for one right now.
So you can
go get one today.
Google, right? Google, and they're available.
The website, if you are interested in getting a death doula, the website that you want to go to find certified death doulas is inelda.org. And I'm going to spell it for you. It's INELDA.org.
Thank you, Kathleen. I love you.
You're welcome. I love you, Bethany. So, Bethany.
Yes?
Not only do I like to drink rosé, I also like to smell like rosé.
What?
And that's very easy with Native's new line of products.
Native deodorant cares about the products that you put on your body. They're a wonderful deodorant if you're concerned about things like aluminum being in your deodorant. But now they have some new scents that you're going to love, like rosé.
They also have a new collection inspired by taking road trips all over the United States, like sweet peach and nectar. Guess the state, Bethany.
Georgia.
And then key lime and sugar.
The South.
The South. Florida. Yeah, the Keys. And the one I'm most excited to try is the midnight sage and jasmine, which is inspired by Southern California. And Native has branched out. Not only do they have their amazing classic deodorant, but now they have body wash and sunscreen. It's super lightweight, absorbs into your skin quickly, and you can choose between unscented or coconut and pineapple.
Plus, now you can get plastic-free deodorant and deodorant for sensitive skin.
I'm obsessed with their rosé body wash. I was just telling Bethany before this commercial that it makes my shower smell like I am the fanciest person I know.
And it works, and it's in a really nice, clean, white bottle. It just looks really beautiful in your shower. So stay fresh, stay clean with Native by going to nativedeo.com/acquired or use the promo code acquired at checkout. That's going to get you 20% off of your first order.
That's nativedeo.com/acquired or use the promo code acquired at checkout for 20% off of your first order.
Kathleen, now that people are starting to go out again and meet up, it takes a long time to recover from hanging out. And maybe we need a little bit more support going back out into the world and making sure our mental health is okay.
Yeah. Bethany and I talk about going to therapy all the time, and that's because to us, therapy is like a religion, you know?
Yep.
It really helps you feel better, and you don't need to be experiencing like this huge personal crisis. Sometimes you just need another person to hear you talk out your everyday problems, and that is 100% okay too.
Talkspace makes it easy to match with a licensed therapist and schedule live video sessions all from the comfort of your home and your device. You can start messaging your therapist the same day you sign up. None of this making an appointment and then having to wait sometimes a month or longer to get in to see your mental health professional.
And Talkspace also offers not only individual therapy, but they offer couples therapy too, in addition to medication prescription services. So setting goals with your therapist and then making those goals happen is easier than it's ever been before.
And whether you're experiencing depression or anxiety or other problems, or just you need a little support in your day-to-day life, Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform to help you sort through any issue. My therapist once helped me figure out how to rent a car because I'd never done it before by myself. So it wasn't like, oh, I'm having an anxiety attack. It was like, how do I rent a car? Yeah. And she sat with me during my appointment and we went through and we did it.
My therapist once said to me, your feelings are valid and that's all that I needed to hear. That's it.
Did you just burst into tears?
Yeah. So start feeling better with a single message and match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off of your first month with the promo code TASTE.
That's $100 off when you use the code TASTE at Talkspace.com. Kathleen, in 2018, a little movie called Black Panther was released. You know, small little indie film called Black Panther.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember that movie.
And people loved it. People were all over social media talking about how awesome it was, how empowering and gorgeous and fun and exciting it was. Everyone loved it. Except.
I knew that. That was coming.
A small and increasingly vocal group of people went on to social media to warn each other about a scene where Killmonger, which is the best villain name ever, who is played by Michael B. Jordan,
yeah,
takes off his shirt to reveal a dense pattern of little raised dot scars all over his body. And people were like, this is disturbing. I want to look at Michael B. Jordan's naked chest, but I can't because there are these raised dots all over it.
Ooh.
Now, this mirrors a year earlier when ads for American Horror Story Cult were released.
Yes. I literally just typed into my Googs American Horror Story Cult.
Yes. Do you want to describe what those ads looked like?
Yes. So, cult starring my ever favorite Sarah Paulson. Mm-hmm. Her character didn't like tiny little holes in mm-hmm. things.
Yes.
So all of the ads were like, one of them is a woman. You see the profile of her face. She has black hair, dark lips. She's very pale. And she's got all of these tiny little holes in her face. Mm-hmm. And another poster looks like a dead woman, very pale. She's got dark lipstick on. And then instead of the top of her head, it looks like her head has been severed and there's just honeycomb mm-hmm. Where her brains should be. And then honey is dripping down her face. So, yes. I mean, all of the posters, you know, promo posters had to do with these tiny little holes inside of skin.
Yes. So many people were made mentally and physically ill by these images yeah. that it led to protests and warnings to other people online. So this fear of these little holes and everything is called trypophobia. It's a Ooh. Fear or disgust of closely packed holes. And it's estimated that some 15 to 17% of people may experience this.
Really? It's yeah. that high?
Yeah. So wow. I don't want to dwell too much on it because if you do feel like you have trypophobia, I don't want you to be turned off by this. But if you don't have it, here are some common triggers for people with trypophobia. Sponges, oh. honeycombs,
oh,
strawberries are a real problem.
Really?
Uh-huh. Close-ups of strawberries. If you take a picture of a strawberry, zoom in so you don't see the outline of the strawberry or the green part, but you just see the skin, it's a gross-looking fruit.
I can see that also, but strawberries are delicious. Yeah. But okay, I really feel bad for people who can't. Like, what if they closed their eyes and then ate it?
I think if you put it in a pie, yeah. so like you're not seeing the outside, you're just getting the delicious, okay. juicy inside plus sugar. Yeah. Great.
Okay.
Shower heads are a problem. Pomegranates on the inside, wow. big problem.
I never thought about something as common as a shower head.
I was looking at my drain this morning, my bathroom drain, Kathleen. Nothing but holes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Bubbles, condensation, cantaloupe, and skin pores. Yeah. So anyone with trypophobia, do not look at my face because my skin pores, you know, you could stick an index finger in one of the pores on my nose.
Bethany, my nose too. My mom's nose and my brother's nose. It's genetic.
It's genetic. This is my favorite part about trypophobia. Some people, those things are fine. Some people, they only have negative reactions to more extreme examples such as... Mm-hmm. Coral reefs, which I get.
Oh, yeah.
Lotus sea pods, which I get.
Yeah.
Suriname toads giving birth.
What is that?
You know, like you see all the time, Suriname toads giving birth.
I need to look this up.
Or, Kathleen, photoshopped faces such as rows of holes or teeth embedded on an arm, shoulder, or face.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you're always – I feel like – part of this is that it's just gross stuff that everyone is sort of grossed out by. If you see a Photoshop picture of teeth embedded on an arm, yeah. that's just gross.
I mean, it's not supposed to be there.
Right. It's just gross in general. I think anyone would be turned off by that.
Though, let's say, Bethany, your ear was severed off and there's so much damage to your head where your ear was, but they want to try and save your ear. I've mm-hmm. seen this on Grey's Anatomy. They will sew your ear to a different part of your body. A lot yeah. of times it's your arm
yeah.
To keep it alive because yeah. it's, you know, it needs a blood source. It needs your blood source. And so they sew it back into your body in a different place.
I heard about a man's penis being sewed onto his arm.
What?
For the same purpose. I don't know if I'm remembering that correctly or did I make it up, but I've heard of that before. And then what do? Do you just have to like put a bandage over it so you don't have to look at your ear arm?
I mean, I think that they tried to put it in a place where you can cover it easily or it's a little bit like camouflaged. But I mean, a Ugh. Penis is a hard one because
yeah,
I mean,
get it.
Does it become a does your arm become erect when you're watching something exciting?
I don't know. Oh. I don't know. It's hard to say. It's Kathleen. There's no way of knowing. So people who have trypophobia, if they see these common everyday items like strawberries, sponges, or Suriname toads giving birth, they get goosebumps. They feel repulsed or uncomfortable. They have visual discomfort like eye strain, distortions, or illusions. They feel distress. They feel their skin crawl. They have panic attacks, sweating, nausea, even body shakes.
You know, the one thing that falls into this category that I find repulsive is – I love pimple popping. I love like little blackheads and whiteheads. I love watching those videos. And with the age of TikTok, they've really become even better. but sometimes there'll be like fake skin. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
And you can pop pimples on fake skin, or you can press down on fake skin pores, which is just a surface made out of plastic. And then all of this quote unquote blackhead juice shoots up. That really bothers me on the fake pimple skin.
I don't like that at all.
Ugh.
Yeah, no, that's going to be real. That's going to be a problem for a lot of people.
It's a no for me, dog.
So the term trypophobia sounds like it started in 2009. There was a University of Albany student who founded the website trypophobia.com, which is still up.
Huh.
Also a support group on Facebook. And there's a psychologist named Jeff Cole at the University of Essex in England. He said that trypophobia is, quote, the most common phobia you have never heard of.
Oh.
There's a woman who lives in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. She said that if she sees things like a small grouping of circles, even if it's like a close-up of cells that you would see in science class in school, something like that, it might take her days to recover from the physical ailments that that causes her.
That's insane. I wonder if she can look at a pore strip after it's been ripped off of somebody's face with very dirty skin.
Unlikely.
Don't you love looking at that, though?
God, I do. Okay, so that's the thing. There are a couple of YouTube quote-unquote tests that I will link to in the show notes. They purport to be tests to tell whether or not you have trypophobia. Yeah. Here's the problem.
Okay.
They include images that are themselves just in general gross.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just images of holes. It's images of, like, a particular frog that has skin that some people say triggers them. But the skin is also, like, rotting, or like something's crawling out of it, or like, you know, so like the images themselves are just already disgusting. So I don't feel like these tests are actually fairly accurate. I feel like they're just gross.
I understand that. There's God, what is it called? If you go to South America, there's some sort of fly that can land on your skin and burrow, and then it like becomes a maggot, and then you
people are gonna have a real hard time with this segment.
Then you have to like press it out of your it's really strange. And
I'm so sorry to everyone.
That's bad.
Is it the tsetse fly?
What, how spell that again?
T-S-E-T-S-E
fly. It probably is. And then it like burrows in your skin and then comes out like a little squirmy. Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that that's what it is. Oh, God.
I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to everyone.
Okay. But I'm glad that you're talking about this, because I think that we need to normalize a foot condition called pitted keratosis.
What's pitted keratosis?
I will get it every now and then. Pitted keratolysis. K-E-R-A-T-O-L-Y-S-I-S. And if you Google image that, yeah.
Oh,
that's
no.
your reaction. So, like, I remember getting it probably 2 years ago, where I was wearing tights and riding boots, and I was so busy. It was a long day. I basically was dressed in my shoes for like 24 hours. And I took off my boots and I took off my tights, and the bottom of my feet had all of the soles of my feet had all of these tiny little holes in it. And basically, I think it's just a type of fungus. It's like small, tiny pinholes in the bottom, in the skin of your feet and the bottom, that build up when you have your shoes on for too long and there's a buildup of moisture.
It's awful. Okay, so Kathleen, this comes into it.
Okay.
So trypophobia is not in the DSM-5. It's not officially recognized as like a mental disorder or a phobia.
Oh, it should be.
Well, researchers are split on this. So a 2013 study concluded that the phobia may really just be our natural fear of harmful things.
Hmm.
One of the examples is that skin diseases or viruses or whatever tend to show up as holes as like a bunch of holes together, like your foot thing, or like smallpox or measles or things like scabies and ticks. They can cause like circular wounds on our skin.
Yeah.
So it may just be a biological aversion to that. It might also be that we're afraid of things in nature that are dangerous and look like that. So for example, there's the blue-ringed octopus, which is super venomous. And it also, one example is it's like a yellow octopus with brightly colored blue spots on it.
Yeah.
And so those things are dangerous. And so we learn to be scared of them. And so that's our aversion to multiple groups of like holes or spots altogether.
I'm looking at the blue-ringed octopus right now, and it's definitely, it's not welcoming.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't look friendly.
No.
So there's this, like, there's this school of thought that it's just an inherent fear that we have. Mm. Some people believe that people, like our ancestors who were afraid of this, avoided poisonous and venomous animals and thus survived to have offspring. And so then the offspring who were more afraid, you know, just kept like perpetuating that in the gene pool, right?
Yeah.
There was also a study in 2017 that came up with a different take on it. They showed pictures to preschoolers. They showed like a frog, and then they showed the same frog but with holes all over its back to see if the kids were afraid of the frog or the holes.
Oh.
And by and large, the kids were afraid of the holes.
Yeah.
So this seems to say that if you have trypophobia, it's not because you learn to be afraid of venomous creatures. It's because the actual image of the holes is very frightening to you, right? Mm-hmm. It's not what the holes are attached to.
Yeah.
It's the holes themselves. Does that make sense?
You don't know. You don't know what's in the holes.
We don't know what's in the holes.
Like, you know, if you have trypophobia, you know when you're at the beach and it's sort of like 5 o'clock, it's the end of the day, and the tide has kind of gone out, and you're standing at the water's edge, and as the ocean water pulls back from the sand, there are all these tiny little holes in the sand, and some of them have little bubbles that burst.
Yeah.
And it's unsettling. Yeah. It's like, whoa, what is in those holes? Like, are they nothing? Like, why do they even form?
Yeah, it's very unsettling. And there are a lot of interesting theories as to where this trypophobia comes from. Here's personally what I think.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with skin. I think that there, for me, when I see an image like that, it is very unsettling, especially if it's a super close-up images of a bunch of holes. It reminds me of like skin being eaten away.
Yeah.
And I think that's really unsettling.
You've never had pitted keratosis in your feet ever?
No, But, you know, I have other feet issues. So, you know, I think feet are just like a gross part of the body. I say we get rid of them all across the board. No to feet. That's a no for me on feet. But this is the most interesting theory and correlation that people have found with trypophobia.
Okay.
So two different studies found that people who have trypophobia were more likely to also have major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, and or social anxiety.
Oh.
Now, let's talk about social anxiety.
Yeah, let's talk about
it. You and I both have it. It's great. Everyone's having fun. Social anxiety is characterized by a strong and persistent fear of being judged by others.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big markers of that is the avoidance of looking at people's faces, avoidance of facial features, especially the avoidance of looking at people in the eyes, because you can see them judging you.
Yeah, you can see into their soul, and their soul is like, ew, your soul's ugly, and I don't want to be friends with you.
Yeah. There are times when, like at our old job, we were often in massive crowds, and there would be times that I could physically feel people looking at me, and I would want – it felt like people touching me. It felt like hundreds of people poking me, which interestingly I don't get when I'm on a stage, but I get when I'm in a large group of people that like can touch me. I feel like their eyes are touching me. It's a very uncomfortable feeling. Yeah.
I get that. Yeah. You just want to melt into a puddle and cease to exist.
Yeah. It's fun. So being afraid of looking at someone in the eyes or having eyes on you, clusters of circles or holes may make a person with social anxiety disorder feel like all of these eyes are on them. It might cause the same level of discomfort or ping the same part of their brain that feels discomfort when people are looking at them.
Oh, Bethany, I'm thinking of, I know it only happens in cartoons, but you know, when there's like a dark room and you're hiding from somebody and all of a sudden these bright white eyes open up.
Yeah. Like when you're solving crimes with Scooby-Doo.
I'm just thinking about the process in which more eyes open, and now the screen is filled with all of these eyes in a dark room. It's very uncomfortable.
It's really unsettling. And so it might be something in our brains that we're not aware of that's drawing comparisons or making us feel the same level of discomfort. And that's really what we know about it. It seems to be a fairly new phenomenon in terms of what people are talking about and being aware of it.
Yeah.
But they say that it might not be a phobia because a phobia is something that begins and thus can end. Like, you're not born afraid of clowns.
Yeah.
You develop a phobia of clowns because something happens to you to create that phobia.
Oh.
So if it's true that it could be genetically passed down, our fear of these holes, because it keeps us safe to be afraid of scary things, that can't be ended. So thus it's not a phobia.
I see.
You know?
Yes. It's a manifestation of other mental things going on with you.
Or it's genetic. Like if you believe that it's passed down from generation to generation, then it's genetic, which means you can't grow out of it. So it's not a phobia necessarily.
So let's once and for all, as a general society, population, podcast community, can we just agree that dried lotus flowers are fugly?
They're fugly.
And they need to be gotten rid of completely. They need to be eradicated from this earth.
What is crawling in there? Like, if you have dried lotus flowers, throw them away, because you could have like an animal crawl out of that and you wouldn't know. They're awful.
I just had to look up lotus flower in bloom because.
Are they pretty? They had freaking better be.
They're very pretty. And I didn't even know exactly what a live lotus flower looked like, because my brain is just always thinking of like the dried, ugly holes, and just it's lotus why? Flower.
I'm looking it up right now. Oh, they're very pretty.
Lotus flowers have, I think they have like spiritual meaning.
Oh, I didn't even, yeah, of course. Yeah, they do. I didn't even really think about the lotus flower coming from the lotus seed pod.
You know what a lotus flower looks like, I guarantee you, gentle listener.
Yeah, it's like that pink flower, and there's usually like a naked woman meditating in the center of it.
Yeah.
On like, you know, some hippie's business card.
It has something to do with conception, I think, like the spiritual meaning behind a lotus flower.
Yeah.
If you have tryptophobia, can you eat chia seed pudding?
Great question. I think it depends on the person.
Can you play, oh God, what's that stupid game?
Whack-a-mole?
Whack-a-mole. Yeah, whack-a-mole, but Operation.
Operation? Hard to say. Maybe because it's different. These holes are all different sizes.
Oh,
you know, if you're picking out the water on the knee, it might be a little tougher than if you're getting the funny bone. You know, the funny bone's long and skinny.
Can you drink boba tea?
Unknown.
Yeah.
I think, and the part that sucks is all of these websites I was going to, they were like, here's how to handle it. Here's how to manage it. And it's all of the same ones that you roll your eyes. It's like, deep breathing, get a massage. I'm like, look, if I have trypophobia and like I see an ad and a woman's brain is a honeycomb, getting a massage.
Yeah.
I feel like people say get a massage, and I love getting a massage and it's wonderful, but I feel like it's the eye rolly way of telling someone like, take a bath with candles. Yes, that's great, but it's not helping me in the moment because I am at the 4th Street stop having a panic attack over this American Horror Story image. I'm not going to like then schedule a massage and wait 7 days to feel better.
I think that was the last season, and I didn't make it through, of American Horror Story, because it was just like, I don't have trypophobia, but it was just so gross that I couldn't make it through.
I saw a woman on Twitter comment that I think the clown was in that one too.
Mm.
And she was like, they have holes and they have clowns. Like, what the fuck am I supposed to do to support this show? I'm scared of everything that's on it.
I'm looking at our microphone right now, and that could be a trypophobia like trigger also.
Everywhere. I mean, your keyboard. It really depends on how bad it is. And so I'm going to leave you with this.
Okay.
There is a subreddit for trypophobia.
Okay.
Now, if you have trypophobia, you may go to that subreddit to find your community. But really, it's just people posting pictures of things that might trigger trypophobia. So I feel like it's not helpful. I feel like it's just a nightmare hellscape for people who actually have trypophobia, because it's like someone posting a picture of their dog poop that has a bunch of holes in it and being like, look at this one. And then everyone screams and can't recover for days.
I'm joining it right now. I love gross things. My favorite subreddits are warts and popping.
So you probably have reverse trypophobia where you actually really dig this kind of stuff.
I do. I do dig it. I mean, I'm speculative about the strawberry thing, because if you look up anything up close, it's pretty ugly and pitted and bumpy.
And that's kind of where I land.
Yeah.
I really think that a lot of this stuff is just inherently creepy anyway.
Yeah.
And if you look at those trypophobia tests, if you have it, fast forward like 2 15s right now. But one of them is a frog in an aquarium. The aquarium is dirty, and then other little things start swimming out of the frog's whole skin.
Oh, yeah.
And there's like creepy music playing. So I'm like, no, that just in general is gross.
Yeah.
So
This is Bethany. This is my new favorite subreddit.
Well, if you want to find your people and also be triggered at the same time, go to rtrypophobia on Reddit. I'll link it in the show notes. And you can find your people.
If there are any listeners who suffer from this, please write us an email about what your daily life is like and the things you do to not find yourself in the path of something holy.
Yeah, and let us know how you clean your nose pores.
Oh,
because that just has to be a daily struggle for you. And yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry, too.
Kathleen, I went out for drinks, and one of the first things we talked about were teeth.
Naturally.
We were talking about how to keep your teeth white and, like, sensitive teeth, because that's the thrilling conversations we're all having right now. And I have to tell you, I brought up Brush.
Because the Brush toothbrush will change your life. I hate brushing my teeth. I do. I don't know why. It's like a simple task, but I dread it. But not with Brush, because it's fun. My Brush Sonic toothbrush makes my teeth feel super clean, like fresh from the dentist clean. And it has all of these really cool settings like gums and whitening and max. And each night I'm like, oh, what setting am I going to choose tonight?
Laundry folding. Plus, it has a 4-week battery life. I know I've mentioned it before, but this is the biggest thing to me. I don't have outlets in my bathroom, so I can't keep a Sonic toothbrush plugged in all the time. It lasts a long time, and it's a beautiful toothbrush. There are so many different gorgeous colors to choose from, so it's sleek and aesthetically pleasing, in addition to being a freaking amazing Sonic toothbrush.
Yeah, and I loved it so much that I got it from my mother-in-law for her birthday.
Aw, that's really nice. What color did you get her?
I got her pink.
Yeah. So get 15% off of your Brush toothbrush kit and refill plan. They have refill plans when you use the promo code TASTE at BRUUSH.com.
Again, that's 15% off using the promo code TASTE at BRUUSH.com. Brush.
Brush.
The little gossip.
Tell me, I love some hot goss.
Okay. I spent the most lovely 4th of July at my mom's house last night. We were playing cornhole and we were making turkey burgers and like people we knew were stopping by. But anyway, you know that show Snapped on, I think it's the Oxygen Network, about women who snapped and killed their partners?
Yes, I do. I love those shows.
Okay. Episode.
Uh-huh.
I found out that somebody that I went to high school with was the other woman that made this wife snap.
What?
I know.
What?
I'm snapped adjacent.
You're like 3 degrees of Kevin Bacon snapped.
It's so crazy. She wasn't named in the episode, but she is named in the court documents of this wife who murdered the husband. And it's crazy.
By the way, the girlfriend did not cause the woman to snap.
No,
the woman snapped.
No.
Let's just make sure we know that's clear.
Yes.
We're all in charge of our own decisions. Just putting that out there. However, this is from 2010.
Uh-huh.
Davidson had a final argument with her husband over an affair he was having with his executive assistant.
Yep.
She testified. And so that was your sort of friend.
It was the person that I knew. We had classes together. We weren't friends.
Okay. Gotcha. That was all I could read before I got a big pop-up that said I have to pay for
this. I have to watch the episode. It's so crazy.
She said she decided to – wait. Yeah, now I can't read it. They won't let me.
So. Yeah, her husband was basically wasn't paying the mortgage, wasn't paying for his daughter's college tuition, the family was basically going broke because he was paying for his executive assistant's apartment, tuition, and car.
Oh, and no.
I remember being friends with her on Facebook years ago thinking, wow, she lives in the nicest condo I've ever seen a college student live in.
Oh, no.
I know. Anyway, I just, you know, juicy hometown gossip. There's nothing like the 4th of July.
You know what? You get all of that hot goss when you go home. Here we go. I'm seeing pictures of the girl, too.
Yep.
There she is.
She later became an influencer. She's got 500,000 followers on Instagram. There's just a little dab of a tea bag for you, gentle listener.
Wow. All right. I'm trying to think if I have any hot goss of people I used to know.
Oh, you do have hot goss. It's not somebody you know. But before we started recording, I was like, Bethany, are you going to watch the new iCarly? And you said no.
No, I'm team Jeanette McCurdy.
What is the fight going on there?
It's not really a fight. And we said in the last episode, and it's true, you don't have to like pick a person. You know, you can like iCarly and you can also like Jeanette McCurdy. But it just sounds like she had a really awful experience filming that show. And she is, by all accounts, very talented, a very talented actress, a very talented director. Yeah. And she came to a point in her career where she was really looking back at the work she had done and she didn't have anything she felt proud of. It sounds like she was really acting to be the moneymaker for her family, which is a lot of times what these child actors are. That's the position they're put in. And then her mother passed away and it sort of made her take stock of everything. Sounds like a lot of substance abuse issues as a result. So
she's not in the new iCarly that's on Paramount Plus.
No, that's why. It sounds like that's why. So this is what I think. I was talking to my friend Kristen about this. I believe that there should be no child actors. I think that being an actor for a child, it just puts the kid in a position where they're around adults. Way more adults than kids normally would be around. If their parents are putting them in the position where they're the moneymaker, then they have a lot of so much pressure to continue doing this.
A la Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm. It also changes the family dynamic because now you're sort of the moneymaker and your parent doesn't really feel like they can parent you or whatever. Yep. I think that all child actors should be CGI motion capture played by Andy Serkis, who does all of the character work for like Planet of the Apes, and he played Gollum, and he just does all of the mocap stuff for films. I think all children in films should be played by Andy Serkis.
You know what? It's an interesting take, and I want to say that I might get behind you on this.
I don't think it's safe for children to be actors professionally. Yeah. I think that you should not be able to be a professional actor until you are at least 18 years old. Mm-hmm. And then on a probationary point, and then you should have to wait until you're 30, because even when you're in your 20s, you make bad decisions. So I think Andy Serkis should have an Andy Serkis School of Motion Capture Acting, and then we just have mocap actors wearing suits with ping pong balls all over them playing children, and then you can just like digitally insert a child.
Speaking of Drew Barrymore,
yeah,
it was recently announced that she was coming out with a magazine. And I said, Bethany, we must have a spinoff podcast where the podcast is just about the Drew Barrymore magazine.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been tricked.
Why?
Because I realized that the Drew Barrymore magazine is published by Walmart.
Oh!
And I spent $10 for that shit to be mailed to me. And then I realized after the fact, so do you know that Walmart has magazines published by them, multiple magazines, where at first it looks like a women's magazine. So you're at checkout and you're like, oh, great, let me grab this copy of Whoa, Wait, which is exactly one of the magazines. And I think it started as an Instagram account by two women who were always like talking about stuff that they bought at Walmart.
Oh no!
Walmart turned these two influencers into a magazine, Whoa, Wait, and everything in the magazine is articles centered around products you can buy at Walmart.
I hate integrated branding. I hate it.
And that is what Drew Barrymore's magazine is too, published by Walmart, all about things you can buy at Walmart, because that's where her furniture brand is at Walmart, I think.
Whoa, wait. Walmart is available all over North America, except parts of Canada, and it looks like Maine and some of Central America.
Only at Walmart.
Oh, man. I feel taken for a ride.
Yeah, I know.
Also, question. Because I sort of sides, when you texted, hey, we should do a podcast based on this magazine, I sort of sidestepped it.
Yeah, because, I figured you didn't want to.
Well, because part of me was like, we barely get this podcast released every week.
I know.
What world do you think we have time for a second podcast? In what universe do you think we have time for a second podcast? Was my first question. Mm-hmm. My second question was, are there any articles about how to rebind your book with human skin? Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Now that you're talking about human skin, I want to tell you that we got an email from a listener. I forwarded it to you. Do you remember the email?
Yes. Yes. Okay. This is amazing. So I am so grateful to our taste buds who know us so well. This is an email we got from taste bud Cece. Cece said, ladies, I could not resist sending this. I can't decide what to think. It's from Craigslist in Honolulu, and it is a set of cutlery, 4 pieces of cutlery, 2 spoons, a knife, and a fork, and the handles are made of human bone.
Oh, my God.
The listing says a rare custom-made set of table flatware with handles crafted from human bone, very comfortable in the hand to use, each handle selected for weight and ergonomic feel. $250. So someone went bone by bone of this human skeleton, I guess, and selected 4 particular bones based on how they felt in this person's hand.
Oh, God.
Do we know where the bones came from?
No, we don't. And Craigslist, that's so sketchy. Can you imagine there's a serial killer out there that's like, oh, I have such a love for killing and also cutlery. Let me make all these forks, spoons, and knives where the handles are human tibias.
You know, it's like that podcast you told me about where that guy was like, you find your brand with like the 2 best things that you're amazing at. Like Lin-Manuel Miranda isn't the best Broadway performer and he's not the best historian, but he is the best Broadway performer about a historic thing, right?
Yes.
Like this person isn't the best serial killer and they're not the best flatware maker, but they are the best flatware maker out of human bones.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so grateful that Cece saw this and immediately was like, an acquired taste podcast, because they're totally right. It's amazing. And I don't know what to think.
If someone gifted this to you, would you ever use it for real?
Yes.
You would?
I think I would use it for spell casting or something ceremonial. I don't think I would use it to eat my morning cereal, but I think I would I think I would bless it and do a ceremony. I think I would like thank the bones and thank the person and really try to let them know that I'm here in peace and I'm like grateful for and sorry.
You'll keep them safe.
But I think I would probably use the knife as like a ceremonial knife. I think I would use the spoons as like a, you know, we're going to heat up some sealing wax or whatever in this. I don't know. Would you?
No, absolutely not. I would bring it to the police.
That was my other question. Mm-hmm. Do we need to do a DNA test on these handles?
You absolutely have to. You have to.
Because they could be part of an unsolved case. Olivia Benson might be trying to figure out who this person is.
You have to, have to, have to. You have to. What would you do if you joined 23andMe and the police used your DNA to find a serial killer that was related to you? How would you feel about that?
Violated. Yeah. So violated. I mean, it's great. We don't want any more serial killers on the streets, obviously, but I don't like the idea of anyone using my stuff without that. I just feel like that's a really big problem. Yeah. That's a slippery slope of ethics. Would you be okay with it?
I'd be totally fine with it. That person deserves to rot in jail, even if it is my brother or my mother.
But it's also they're using your proprietary DNA.
Yeah.
Without your consent or permission.
But how else would I know that I have a slightly increased risk to be adverse to gluten?
See, Kathleen, you're the reason You're the type of person who's sending our society straight to hell, and I'll tell you why. Because you like Alexa in your house, mm-hmm. and you're fine with her controlling every facet of your house because it makes your life easier.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bother you that she could be feeding your information to someone else, mm-mm. that her, your entire house could one day turn against you because the locks are all controlled by her. It doesn't bother you that police are using your DNA without your permission to find serial killers. Like,
it's fine.
It doesn't bother you. But then when, what will bother you? Like, when will you think this is too much?
I don't know. See, I'm not even that mad when my phone listens to me and then suggests products, because most of the time I do like those products.
Have you heard that they've proven it doesn't listen to you, but it's even scarier?
No, what is it?
So it's not that your phone listens to you. It's that your phone is communicating with the phones around it. So here's what happens. Let's say you visit your mom. Your phone and her phone are sharing data. This is from what the limited understanding I have of what I read.
Yeah.
They're sharing data. So your phone, whatever, now knows that your mom bought bug spray.
Yeah.
Well, if your mom bought bug spray, you might also be in a position where you too need bug spray. So it suggests bug spray to you.
Oh my God. That's brilliant.
It's actually worse than your phone listening. It's your phone communicating and pinging your location, pinging the phones around you,
wow.
picking up on what they're doing, and thus recommending it to you. So like yesterday, Dennis and I were watching a YouTube video. It was sponsored by Wicked Clothing.
Yeah.
So then he went on his phone yeah. and was Googling Wicked Clothing and looking up the shirts they have, which are wicked. My phone then today on Instagram recommended Wicked Clothing to me as a sponsored post.
Oh, wow.
So it's a thing, but it's not listening. It's communicating, which is worse, and learning, which is so much worse. I'd rather it just be listening.
Oh, my God. Sometimes I look up really gross, disgusting stuff.
Yeah.
And then one of my family members or my husband or my friends are like, oh, my God, why is this foot fungus thing popping up on my phone? Oh,
now you know.
I was in the vicinity of Kathleen.
Now you know. You know, and it is a good way if you want to get someone in your life in trouble. Let's say you're really mad at, you know, your brother and you want yeah. his girlfriend to break up with him. You start Googling how to cheat on your girlfriend, and then maybe stuff shows up on his phone and then she sees it and then they'll break up.
That is brilliant. 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 Or if you want your partner to get you something for Christmas or Valentine's Day, that's how you do it. See?
You start Googling like vacation spots.
Yeah. And
yeah.
see, and you get inside your partner's brain.
Yeah.
And they don't even know it.
Yeah. You inception your partner.
Bethany, what did you learn this week?
Okay. I am typically not a fan of motivational speakers or self-help gurus. I tend to find them a little treacly. That said,
okay,
I found one this weekend that I really enjoy. Dennis introduced me to her. Technically, she's like everything that usually drives us nuts.
Yeah.
But we love her. Her name is Shannon, S-H-A-N-N-A-N. Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.
Okay.
Her Instagram has all of these wonderful things. I think the reason that we like her is because she does seem incredibly authentic. She doesn't seem like, live your best life and be a girl boss. Live, laugh, love, and be a girl boss.
Okay.
She's just like, stuck. Like, if you're drained, it's because you're saying yes to everyone. Learn how to say no and feel better. And even her bio says, not a girl boss, just a boss.
Love that.
And I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
I like her.
Okay. Shannon Munson.
And she was actually, Kathleen, talking about revenge bedtime, which is what you were talking about a couple weeks ago.
My favorite topic.
Yeah. She has, I mean, she's just great. If you're a recovering people pleaser, read this. 9 signs you're going to be successful regardless.
Oh.
It's great. She's great.
I love the use of the word regardless at the end of that.
She said, 7 things that are not selfish. Taking space, creating distance, saying no, putting yourself first, making money, investing in your health, being alone.
Ugh.
It's not selfish to not have kids, to not be in a relationship, or to choose spend time alone. Stop shaming people for it.
Ooh.
I like her. And then she posts other people's comments too, like other people that she's like elevate. I don't know. I like her anyway. That's what I learned. Oh. What'd you learn?
I learned that expiration dates don't matter as much as you think.
Ooh, how long can I push that yogurt?
Okay. So if you have something like a yogurt best if used by.
Yeah.
Basically, a best if used by date just suggests when this product might be at its peak quality. After that date, you know, some of the texture and flavor might start to go down in quality, but you can still eat it safely.
Do we know when that goes from being fine to being deadly?
Well, that's when you need to use your nose. You need to do the sniff test.
Gotcha.
Okay. The one you need to pay most attention to is the use-by date.
Okay.
It's found on more perishable items like meat. It's still okay to consume a product for a short period after that date, but don't wait too long.
Don't push it.
Yeah. And then the sell-by date is basically a date for retailers to get products off the shelves. And sell-by dates, you can still eat it after the sell-by date. So the most important one is the use-by date. Okay. So, yeah.
Good to know. Thank you, Kathleen.
You're welcome.
Kathleen, where can people find you on social media?
At WebGirlKathleen on everything. How about you, Bethany?
Ms. Bethany Watson on Instagram, Radio Bethany on Twitter. And now, here's where you can find our podcast.
You can find our podcast on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Instagram, Acquired Taste Podcast.
On Facebook, Acquired Taste Podcast. Plus, make sure you check out the fan group. There are a lot of wonderful people in there.
You can send us an email at acquiredtastepodcast@gmail.com.
You can also send us snail mail. Our address is at Acquired Taste Podcast, P.O. Box 1717, Hoboken, New Jersey 07030.
We have a phone number. We play your voicemails at the end of almost every single episode. You can leave us a voicemail at 917-994-0353.
Wherever you listen to this podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. 5 stars is the best. Helps us move up in the ranks.
Our podcast videos are edited by Dennis Callow. You can find him on social media, Dennis C-A. H-L-O.
And we have a live show that you can join on Patreon, patreon.com/acquiredtaste. What are our dates?
Our upcoming dates are July 14th and July 28th at 7:30 Eastern Time.
Okay, Bethany, do your thing.
This is your weekly reminder to take a deep breath.
All right, taste buds, here's what's on your mind this week.
Hey ladies, this is Cheyenne, taste bud from Idaho. So I was just listening to the new episode where Bethany was talking about her resting bitch face and people are intimidated by her and the way that she looks. And I'm sorry, but I have never felt so seen in my life. I work at a car dealership and I work with a bunch of men, and one of the guys that I've worked with for like 10 years has told me before, he's like, you know what, when I first met you, I thought you were going to be the biggest bitch ever. And you were the, one of the nicest people I've ever met. So just know, Bethany, that you are not alone with your resting bitch face and the whole people being intimidated by your face. Like, I just tell them, it's just my face. Like, I don't know how else to do it. Like, would you rather me, like, I can't, like, walk around with a big old smile on my face like a psycho.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. I'm just listening to the most recent episode. And Kathleen, you're talking about the Poconos taste bud meetup and the friendships that have blossomed because of the buzz. And it just made me want to share that I have actually also met one of my best friends through an Acquired Taste podcast through the Facebook group. There was like, I don't know, like 2 years ago or whatever, there was like a everybody drop like who lives where kind of comment post, and I met up with one of the girls there, and I'm actually a bridesmaid in her wedding, and she has become one of my absolute closest friends. You guys have made an amazing community of people, and I'm super grateful for it, and I love you guys, and keep doing you. Have a good day. Love you. Bye.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. I just had to pause the latest episode because Bethany started talking about how she always thought that she would never be able to braid hair. And I just today sat down and decided I'm going to learn how to braid hair. And it's something that I've always wanted to do and never have been able to. So I'm just really happy that Bethany also was struggling with this and overcame it. Her story of braiding is really inspiring. So now I'm going to go watch some YouTube videos and learn how to braid my hair. Love you, ladies. Bye.
Hey, buds. I had to call in. I just listened to the new episode about nicknames. So my name is Tia. Hi, Tia from North Idaho. But Tia's not a name that, like, has a bunch of nicknames. So I got called only because it rhymed. There's no story to it, but it was Tia Diarrhea. So that was a fun one. And then also I got called the Chia Pet commercial, the Tia. So Anyways, I had to call because my name is not a fun name to have nicknames with. So, anyway, I hope everyone's having a good week. Bye.
Hey, Bethany and Kathleen. It's Taste Bud Jessica. I'm calling because I'm just listening to one of the most recent episodes. And Bethany, you literally said, that's an acquired taste for me when you were talking about watermelon. And I freaked out. I love that. Like, when you're listening to a podcast or watching a movie and they say the name of the film, like, within the context of the film. I just love that. It just makes me very excited. So that's it. I just got really excited and went, ah, I love that she did that. Love you, girl. Bye.
Hi, my name is Victoria. I'm originally from Brooklyn, now living in Monroe, New Jersey. I just wanted to call because June 22nd was my 40th birthday, and it's been quite a year besides COVID and the pandemic. I actually had my second baby, which was an oops baby, 9 years after my first, at 40. So that was really interesting on New Year's. So it was actually, I was 39, but I just wanted to say I really love the podcast. And Kathleen, I think you are my mom's long lost daughter because she loves decorating. She loves fashion. She loves all of that stuff. She loves cooking. And she told me to tell you to go to estate sales. She goes to estate sales like every single weekend. And that's where she finds all the furniture in her house. So, and Bethany, I love Ariel too. I do it as well. So hope you ladies are having a great day. And I guess that's it. Bye.
February 26th. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited.
Hey, America, you could win $5,000 a week forever from Publishers Clearing House. You heard me right. You could now win $5,000 a week paid to you every week for your whole life. Then after that, someone you choose gets $5,000 a week for their life. But you have to go to PCH.com before it's too late. There's just days left to enter to win, so go to PCH.com right now. You can't win if you don't enter. It's $5,000 a week forever. Go to PCH.com right now. That's PCH.com.
Peacock is streaming your favorite shows, movies, live sports, breaking news, exclusive originals, and every live WWE pay-per-view. It's The Office, Chrisley Knows Best, and Peacock original shows like Funky Brewster. Peacock, watch for free, upgrade for more. Stream now at PeacockTV.com.